Hi, everybody. I know there's folks still hopping on, but I thought I would welcome everyone to Nature Connects and get us started. Nature Connects is the Massachusetts TNC's webinar series that connects you as scientists, experts, and influencers from New England and around the world. And I want to thank you all for joining us today. I'm Massachusetts State Director and your host today, Deb Markowitz. We're going to be talking with Kelsey Wirth, the founder of Mothers Out Front. Mothers Out Front is a national nonprofit organization that was founded in Boston that mobilizes mothers and others to take action against climate change. After many years working as an entrepreneur, Kelsey was inspired to start Mothers Out Front when, as a new mother, she began to worry about how climate change would impact her children's lives. She was struck by how few opportunities there were to meaningfully engage in addressing the problem, so she set out to change this. Now, Mothers Out Front is well known as a powerful grassroots force for positive change here in Massachusetts and across the United States. Prior to starting Mothers Out Front, Kelsey was the co-founder and president of Align Technology, the maker of Invisalign. She served on the boards of the Environmental Working Group and Grist Magazine, and she currently serves on the board of the Winslow Foundation and on the advisory board of the Better Future Project. Kelsey will spend about 20 minutes today telling us about her journey and Mothers Out Front, and then she'll take your questions. So as you think of questions, please share them in the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen. So we're so pleased to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us, Kelsey, and why don't you take it away?
Great. Deb, thank you so much for having me. It is such an honor to be here with all of you today, and particularly with the Nature Conservancy, which has done such remarkable work over many, many, many decades. And we are always thrilled at Mothers Out Front to partner with organizations that share our mission and our goals of creating a habitable planet for everybody on it. I will get us started here. Let me just move into my presenter mode. Every day is a good day to talk about climate change, and today, perhaps feels like a particularly good one. Many of us saw the news this morning of the recent UN report. All of them are sobering. This one is arguably particularly sobering. And the UN Secretary General said yesterday, we must stop waging a war on nature. So here we are talking about how regular people like you and I can get engaged in fighting the greatest challenge facing humanity. So I want to start with this picture because it's of people. Mothers Out Front is about the people who join our movement. This is from a few years ago in front of the Massachusetts State House, obviously. So the story of Mothers Out Front starts with my own personal journey. And I grew up in a political family. This is me on the far right in the cowboy hat, walking in a parade with my family. My father ran for office when I was 5 years old and served for 18 years. So my entire upbringing was in that very political world where he and my mother both very early on got interested in climate change, and I grew up with climate scientists in and out of our living room and kitchen on a regular basis. And yet, despite being very aware of these tremendous challenges facing us, it wasn't something I spent a whole lot of time thinking about or worrying about. My assumption was that people like my father in powerful positions were going to solve this overwhelming problem that we faced. But then I became a mom. These two girls on the left entered my life. They are now quite a bit older on the right-hand side, both teenagers. But it was when I became a mom, as Deb referenced earlier, that I began to see the climate crisis through an entirely different lens, which of course is that of a mom who's number one job is to protect my children. So I had a particular moment of despair one evening, and I remember feeling that I couldn't possibly be the only mother out there with these deep feelings of concern, as well as outrage at the state of our planet and what it meant for my children and children all around the world. The question was, of course, what to do about all of that. And around that time, I had the opportunity to meet Marshall Ganz, who is a veteran organizer and teaches organizing at the Harvard Kennedy School. And Marshall taught me a couple of key things. One is about the role of social movements in driving transformational change throughout our history. He talked about the incredible power of people coming together out of a sense of shared values, as well as a shared sense of outrage at the disconnect between the reality of the world we're in and the world we want to create based on the values that we share. And perhaps most importantly, in many ways, Marshall taught me that organizing has a proven methodology to it, a proven framework and practice. It's not simply about getting a bunch of passionate people together and saying, okay, let's go out and make something happen. There really is a discipline to it that can be learned and taught to anybody. So Mothers Out Front, our vision and goals is to create a multiracial grassroots movement of mothers that is powerful enough to achieve bold climate policies at the local, state, and national levels. Our vision is for a safe, just, and equitable world. And I want to pause on the justice part of the work that we do. We are committed to two forms of justice. One is very much focused on intergenerational justice. So justice for our children, our grandchildren, and future generations. And of course, justice for people on the planet today. So we know that communities of color, what are often referred to as frontline communities, are disproportionately affected both by our use of dirty energy, fossil fuels, and will be disproportionately impacted by climate change impacts as they grow worse every year. So why movement building? Back to sort of what Marshall taught me, and this should not be of surprise to any of you who engages in the democratic process, but there is a fundamental truth about American politics, which is that elected officials respond to pressure from organized constituencies. It is rare that politicians simply lead out of the goodness of their heart, much as we like to believe that would be possible. And in fact, another way to think about this is that our greatest societal challenges, including climate change, really are power problems. They're not information problems or knowledge problems or technical problems. They are problems that are rooted in too much power in the hands of a very few, in this case, the fossil fuel industry, as well as all the special interests that benefit from our existing status quo, and too little power in the hands of the rest of us who are suffering the consequences of inaction. Why moms? Why do we focus on moms? Well, for one, there are a lot of us. There are about 80 million of us across the country, and we are literally everywhere. We occupy almost every office in the land. We've gotten closer to the highest as of just a few weeks ago. We vote in very, very high numbers. We have extraordinary purchasing power. We make most of the purchasing decisions for our households. We have powerful social networks. All of us are very much aware of that. We are the community builders and the community maintainers. We are fundamentally wired to protect. That does not mean we believe mothers have a monopoly on caring for our children, but it does mean that we believe we're put together a little bit differently. And we really have a set of very strong values when it comes to wanting the best for our children, being concerned about their welfare, and wanting to make sure we are creating the opportunities we believe they deserve as they grow up in this world. And finally, mothers have been a force in past movements in this country. I want to point out, very importantly, we are mothers led. We are not exclusively mothers. We could not do what we do if it were not for all the fathers and other partners who are part of our movement. And that is very important. We welcome everybody to get involved in the work that we do. Fundamentally, you know, what is our theory of change? It is that engaged moms alter the political landscape. So if we have enough moms organizing, driving campaigns for change in different communities all across the country, at the local, state, and national levels, that we will transform the political landscape in this country, creating conditions for bold climate action. How do we work as an organization dedicated to grassroots organizing? Most critically is bringing a relationship-based approach to engaging mothers in building relationships with them, facilitating the process of their building relationships with one another. We use a lot of tried and true organizing, so face-to-face meetings, one-to-ones, house parties, community meetings. These days, it's Zoom to Zoom, so to speak. And we combine that tried and true organizing with the latest in technology. This is 2020, and obviously we need to make full use of the technology we have at our fingertips. So we do a lot of digital outreach, follow-up, and other forms of digital engagement. We invest in women's leadership. So we are all about bringing mothers into our movement and providing them with the training and ongoing coaching that they need to be successful leaders in the work that they do as part of Mothers Out Front. And finally, and very importantly, we provide a team structure. So this is critically important to the work that we do. We support mothers in teams at the local, state, and national levels. The fundamental building blocks of the work that we do are our local community teams and the local campaigns that we drive. And then we leverage the power we're building at, we build at the local level to affect change at the state level and ultimately at the national level, where there are opportunities to do that. So we got started back in 2013, as Deb mentioned, here in Massachusetts. We have since expanded into 4 additional states. So we have staff organizers on the ground in 5 states. Those are Massachusetts, New York, Virginia, California, and most recently, Colorado. We have 46 teams across those 5 states. We have 35,000 people in our movement. And we always, always emphasize the number of active volunteers that we have as part of our movement, because it's our active moms that really do the work of our movement. And we track very carefully moms coming in, moving up our ladder of engagement, and becoming leaders in their teams at the state, local, state, and national levels. And all of that work is supported by a staff of 31. So I just want to give you some sample campaign wins of our organizing work all across the country, and then we'll zero in on our work here in Massachusetts. I imagine many of you would be most interested in that. But we support our teams in identifying for themselves the campaigns that they want to work on. It's really important that I emphasize all of our work is done in close relationship with allies. So one of the first things that our teams do is figure out who their local allies are that they want to work with. We never win alone, and we know that. We like to say we play nicely with others. So a few examples of our work, specifically on fossil fuel infrastructure, we have a number of teams that have engaged in stopping newly proposed fossil fuel infrastructure, because we know that if we're going to protect the climate for our kids, we've got to stop building new fossil fuel infrastructure. Sort of rule number one, stop digging us into a deeper hole. In a couple of examples, in Lansing, New York, we played a major role in ensuring that the Cayuga coal-fired power plant was not repurposed into a natural gas plant, but instead is becoming a data center. And you will see mothers down below testifying, children in their laps. That's a very common scene for us. In Virginia, we played an important role in the delay of the Header Improvement Project, which involves a few pipelines and compressor stations, and delay is always the first step toward getting a project canceled. In terms of clean renewable energy, our teams are involved in any number of efforts focused on accelerating the deployment of clean renewable energy. San Jose became the largest city in the U.S. to adopt community choice aggregation. Just yesterday, they voted in one of the strongest building standards law in the city, restricting gas hookups in new construction. And we have a number of teams across the country that are engaged in electric school bus campaigns that are a great way to get mothers involved. The benefits are enormous for children in the very, very short term. And of course, because of the diesel pollution that they no longer have to breathe with the move to electric buses, and the climate benefits also very clear. So we've had wins in Fairfax County, Virginia, where our mothers are also have also written a statewide bill that they will be pushing in the next session. Also in Westchester County, New York, and in San Ysidro, California. All of our campaigns at some level have an environmental justice component. A few recent wins that really centered EJ in those campaigns include a win in San Diego, where our team played an instrumental role ensuring that the air quality control district in San Jose, San Diego, will hire full-time environmental justice staff. And then up in Yolo County in the capital region outside of Sacramento, they have declared a climate emergency as a result of lobbying by members of Mothers Out Front. So that brings us to our Massachusetts movement. Here is a map of where our teams are. You can see sort of the concentration of members. We have around 12,000 members of our movement statewide. About 9,000 of them are in towns that with existing community teams, and about close to 3,000 fall outside of community teams. And our total number of teams is 21. And I thought I would tell you a little bit about our Massachusetts work, which starting, I'll tell the story of our engagement in gas leaks, starting out with a focus on gas leaks that quickly has evolved into a focus on how we move Massachusetts off gas entirely. So this campaign started with our downtown Boston team learning about the extent to which gas leaks plague the distribution system across the state of Massachusetts, and perhaps most especially in Boston, where there are pipelines that date back to the 1860s when Abraham Lincoln was president. Believe it or not, it is true. And the leakage from these pipelines, these pipes, is really quite extraordinary. There's a map of all the leaks in the Boston area on the left there. And we quickly, our moms quickly teamed up with a partner called Heat that was producing these maps. And one of the ways we engage mothers and others in this campaign was to go around and actually physically tag the gas leaks in communities all across the state. So you see the gas leaks tagging up there on the right and down below. This was a wonderful action where there was a big gas leak right across from City Hall. And we actually had a drone film the protest that took place out in front. That was last summer, I believe. So that was the beginning of our engagement in sort of the conceptually the notion that we actually have to move the state entirely beyond gas. And one of the first steps, in addition to going out and tagging gas leaks across the state, was to come together with allies. And Mothers Out Front brought together a group that now is called the Gas Leaks Allies. It's been meeting regularly now for several years and continues to play a really powerful role in thinking about gas policy across the Commonwealth. A few of the wins as a result of the work that we've done at Mothers Out Front, as we ensured a commitment from the three largest gas utilities to identify and fix the largest gas leaks within a two-year period. We played an important role in the passage of state legislation addressing gas leaks in 2016, 2018, and again, 2020. We have had various of our teams pass local ordinances and resolutions committed to identifying and fixing gas leaks. And we really played an important role in ensuring that the need to move off gas is now a central part of policy discussions across Massachusetts. And then finally, it's hard to overstate the importance of changing the narrative around gas. So that involves the gas leaks tagging, tagging of trees. We've had funeral services for trees that have been killed by gas leaks. We've brought a lot of attention to the danger of explosions. And we started doing induction cooking parties to introduce people to the fact that we don't need, despite what the gas companies tell us, we do not need gas stoves to cook successfully in our kitchens. So what does this look like in the coming year and beyond? Really, we're honing in on focusing on the need to transition off gas for heating. Heating represents about a third of our greenhouse gas emissions in Massachusetts, and it is growing. Over half the homes in Massachusetts rely on gas for heating. So there are a few components of this campaign. One, again, continuing to focus on changing the narrative. A recent poll indicated that a full 73% of Massachusetts residents have a positive view of gas, and one third of Massachusetts residents actually believe natural gas is a renewable source of energy, as astonishing as that might sound to people who follow this issue a little more closely. We have to make sure that we are not building new gas infrastructure. That is especially important for frontline communities where that are already overburdened by infrastructure that is polluting and harmful. We're going to be focusing on legislation that promotes and finances a transition to renewable heat at utility scale. So we can't do it household by household. This has got to be a statewide push because ultimately, if it's simply household by household, the only ones that switch are those that can afford to pay for it. And then people who are left on gas and bearing the brunt of paying for the infrastructure are lower income households, and that's obviously an unacceptable outcome. And finally, it's critically important that the gas companies develop a transition plan. We have a history of working closely with the gas companies. There is an open docket with the Department of Public Utilities now, right now, focused on encouraging the gas companies to really be thinking about what this transition looks like and how do they anticipate the transition in a way that ensures that jobs remain and the gas companies have business models that no longer rely on selling gas, but rather rely on selling heat. A few other areas of focus for us, on the legislative front, we have been involved along with many allies in pushing a major climate bill, which is in conference committee now. I'll come back to that at the end of this presentation. And really importantly, environmental justice is a major focus of that bill, really for the first time. So ensuring that when decisions are made around anything related to climate and environment, that the impacts of traditional environmental justice communities are considered at every step of the way. And then we have a number of our community teams that have passed community energy plans that increase essentially the percentage of renewable energy in their town and city's electricity mixes. So what is next for us in Massachusetts? We have our next statewide summit in early February of 2021 to finalize our statewide campaign or campaigns. We will generally take on one or two statewide campaigns. And we have just hired a new organizer in Lawrence, which we're very excited about and are about to hire or looking to hire soon a new organizer in Worcester. And I include this computer screen, which is a lot less exciting than the other photos, because this is the reality of the world we're living in now. We have, while we have been deeply impacted by the pandemic, we have also very successfully migrated so much of the organizing that we do online. And in fact, this was a state strategy meeting that I had the opportunity to attend just a few weeks ago. We had over 100 moms joining that Zoom call. So what does our road ahead look like at Mothers Out Front, you know, beyond Massachusetts? First and foremost, we will continue our focus on building power at the local and state levels. That is where we engage moms. That is where there are the most opportunities to affect change. So that will remain our focus. We will continue to center racial justice and equity and the organizing that we do. We have some internal org change work underway to help support that. And then we have some work to do to determine our strategy for growth. So we will be answering questions like, so what should our demographic focus be going forward? How do we want to think about our strategy for expansion? Do we want to look, for example, at swing states where having organized constituencies of moms can help impact things at the national level, given that we have such a short window in which to avoid climate catastrophe, as we know from all the UN studies? Do we want to focus on states that are known, you know, as huge oil and gas producers? That's another question we will be answering. And then, of course, there's the role of digital. We live in the digital age. We have thousands of moms engaged in the work that we do outside of the states where we have staff on the ground. How do we most effectively keep those mothers engaged and empower them to do important work in their states? And then, of course, we have a new administration, and we will be looking for opportunities to strategically engage in transformative climate policy at the federal level. We will do that, of course, only working in close alliance with allies, and look for places where bringing our mom voice and mom power to bear feels particularly strategic. And I include, finally, this photo from last year. Mothers Out Front was awarded a Lighthouse Award for our climate activism by the United Nations. And our co-founder, Vanessa Rule, on the right there, was able to go to Madrid, where she had the chance to interact with climate leaders from all across the world, which was very exciting. So thank you very much again for the opportunity to be here with you today. Thank you, Deb, and to everyone at the Nature Conservancy Massachusetts. We would love for you to join us. There are two specific action steps you might take. One is to visit the Take Action page on our website and sign up for our email alerts. That's the link right there. It also would be easy to find at just mothersoutfront.org if you don't want to write that down. And second, very specifically, please join us for our Twitter storm, which is happening on December 7th, which is this coming Monday. Right now, the roadmap big climate bill that has been in the works for 2 years now is in conference committee. We want to make sure that what comes out of that committee is as aggressive as it can be. So we are engaging in a Twitter storm. All I want for Christmas is a climate bill with teeth. Please join us for that. And if you sign up for that Take Action on that Take Action link there, you will be receiving updates on how to help out with that Twitter storm. And that's it.
Well, thank you so much, Kelsey. That was really terrific. And, you know, I know so many of the people who are with us today are always asking the question, like, what can I do? How can I make a difference? This is such a big challenge. And it's really wonderful that you have some very specific immediate term actions for folks. And I just want to let people know that we will be sending out information following this this webinar with those specific action items, so that if you didn't take notes, you will get it in your inbox in the next couple of days. Right. So you know, as I was listening to you, first of all, you know, I also woke up to this UN Secretary General, you know, statement, which I was so pleased to hear and, of course, alarmed. You know, we have to take action on climate change, and nature has to be part of the solution. You know, without nature, we don't survive. And it really underscored the urgency for action. And one of the things I really appreciated from your presentation is that Mothers Out Front is designed to be regular people fighting the greatest challenge for humanity. And I just love that statement because the truth is we only do see change when people rise up in movements and demand it. So it was also interesting for me to hear how you started by learning about movement building and then actually went and did it. So, you know, I think that's great. And actually, before I go into a couple questions that I have coming out of this presentation, I want to remind our listeners that you can put your questions into the Q&A tab at the bottom of the screen. So if you've got some questions, put them in. We'll be taking a look at them and answering them for you. So I was interested in knowing how you took theory and made it into practice. Like, it was really interesting that you were in Massachusetts. You went to the Kennedy School to the greatest thinkers on social movement and movement building. And did in those conversations, did you get like a menu? First you do this and then you do that. And then did you follow it? And how did that work?
Well, that's a good question. I think, no, it wasn't exactly a menu like that. It took my meeting Vanessa Rule, who is the co-founder of Mothers Out Front, who, you know, taking a plunge to start a national movement to try to protect the world from climate change is not something one does, you know, on one's own.
It's pretty bold.
Well, and I, you know, we didn't really think of course, quite the enormity of what we were doing in taking the first steps. But really what we did is we brought a group of moms together in my living room. And that was the first. And, you know, the first question was, is this real? Like, we think there's an opportunity here. Is it real? So testing it with a small circle of moms that really became our founding team, that was the first step. And then having house parties. So having a series of, she and I facilitated, I think, 23 house parties in a 3-month period. And every time we came together and facilitated a house party, we would talk about what went well, what didn't go well. And we were getting coaching from the start. And that was critically important. We recognized that. We didn't know what we were doing. And we received coaching from somebody who had worked very, very closely with Marshall and from Marshall himself, some people who really held our hand in those earliest days and did actually, as you suggested, sort of map out like, okay, this is what you want to do. And then here's, you know, we know this works, right? We know this works from years of organizing. And really, as much as anything, the sense of possibility and hope really came from Marshall. I mean, really came from those initial conversations and then just grew as we had these house parties. And we figured out right away that we are tapping into something very, very real. People really wanted to join us and get involved and make this happen.
So I guess that's pretty cool. I think sounds like the lesson learned is that, you know, there is a technique to this. There are things, you know, that we have learned from history that works, but ultimately it's got to resonate with people.
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
And so the fact that you as a mother, you know, woke up at night, and I have done this too. I've got 3 adult children and I wonder, like, I want to be a grandmother. I want them to feel like they can have children safely and that there will be a good world for them. And I know a lot of people think about this, you know, regularly. And so how do you convert that? So your theory of change is right. You know, you engage moms, you'll alter the political landscape, and that will create a condition for action. And it sounds like you're seeing that.
I think we are seeing that. I mean, it's when given the opportunity to get involved in a meaningful way, we are finding that people jump at it, that what people need is a sense of agency. You know, this is an overwhelming problem, and it is coming together and working with others. The relationships are the light among our moms are the lifeblood of our organization. People show up time and again, no matter how tired they are, because they've made a commitment to the other women who are a part of our movement. And that is what feeds our movement, keeps it going, and is absolutely essential to the work that we do.
So it's back to your statement earlier about how it's all about personal relationships and it's about developing women as leaders. Yes. So they feel empowered to go out and, you know, affect state and national policy. And so are you still just recruiting through house parties and these are just taking off on their own? Is that how you get?
That's a good question. So we recruit through house parties. We recruit through community meetings. We recruit through, we're doing more testing of digital outreach. So seeing how effectively we can bring people into our movement digitally. But it is very important, particularly as moms get more involved, that they receive the training and the coaching to be effective, because it's, you don't want people joining us, wanting to make something happen, run into roadblocks because they're not getting enough support, and then lose faith that actually they do have the agency, to make something happen. And so we recognize people need support in making this happen. And that is our job. Fundamentally, our most important job is to enable moms to be active leaders in protecting our kids from the climate crisis. That's the most fundamental work that we do.
That's great. So we did get a question. Different places have very different climate-related opportunities. Is your activism organized in a way that fits these diverse opportunities?
Yes. And in fact, we are structured in a way that really recognizes the diversity of experience, the diversity of concerns, the diversity of the realities, you know, faced by different communities. And so in some places, in some communities, the number one concern might be air pollution. And we want to make sure we are engaging moms in campaigns to address air pollution. And you know, some of the work we've done in San Diego County gets to that. And the fact that we recently had this campaign win where the Air Quality Control District will hire full-time environmental justice staff. Now that sounds like a small technical, you know, minor thing. In fact, it will have significant reverberations for, you know, years and years to come. And in other places, people are concerned about a pipeline that's being proposed in their backyard. In other places, the opportunity really is around having the municipality sign on to more aggressive renewable energy standards. So it really varies from place to place. Our job at Mothers Out Front is to support our teams of moms in determining for themselves what it is they want to work on. And we look for all kinds of connections so that if there's a team in Roanoke, Virginia, working on electric school buses, that they are connecting with our team of moms in Long Island, New York, that has already started an electric school bus campaign, so that we facilitate that kind of cross learning, as well as give our moms a sense that they are not just working on their local campaign, but they really are part of something bigger that is growing all the time.
That's great. So I was actually curious, you know, I could see how the organization started here in Massachusetts and you have house parties. How did it grow beyond Massachusetts? How did you get it into other states? It's, you know.
Well, it started a few different ways, to be honest with you. It started very organically, where one of our founding mom leaders here in Massachusetts moved to Rochester, New York. And she decided she wanted to go to work for Mothers Out Front full time. And we said, okay, great, let's give it a shot. So that was how we grew into New York. In Virginia, we were much more intentional about it. We knew we wanted to expand beyond the blue states of the Northeast. And yet we didn't want to go too far afield so we could get back and forth easily and stay in close touch easily. And Virginia, we did a whole bunch of research. Virginia sort of surfaced as a great place to go next. So we went in and started laying the groundwork and identifying, you know, first hired some staff after meeting with a whole bunch of allies locally. In California, we had a mom in Orange County who simply wouldn't take no for an answer. She kept contacting us and said, I want to get, and we said, we don't have the resources. We don't have the bandwidth. She said, well, I'm forming a team. And the same mom has now left California. She's in St. Louis, Missouri. And she formed her own team in St. Louis with no staff support on the ground. So it, there are various ways in which we are growing. Some of it is organic, but we need to be strategic. You know, as we have gotten larger, we've gotten more strategic because of limited resources. So we want to be smart. We can't support everything out there, much as we would love to do that. And so we really want to be smart and intentional about how we expand.
Yeah, that was one of the questions we got in the Q&A was that you're a successful and fast-growing organization. As organizations grow, their control structures at some point need to change, and sometimes the qualities of the leaders that start a movement aren't what's needed to manage a larger organization.
Right.
Having had to deal with that. So it sounds like you're thinking about being very, very deliberate in your growth.
We are. I mean, we now have a staff of 31. We're a virtual organization. We have no headquarters. We're all across the country. Everybody works from home. And our staff has evolved to be 50% people of color, which has been a goal of ours, and we're proud of that. It's only one small step in a journey of really centering equity in everything that we do. And the face of our movement is going to be shifting over time because of intentional steps that we are taking, and that means leadership is going to look different. We're in the process, as I mentioned briefly earlier, we're embarking upon an organizational change process that's really going to involve some of that deep internal work of revisiting our mission, vision, values in light of where we are as an organization 7.5 years in, and then thinking about what is the org structure that we need to most effectively to support the work that we know we need to do in the coming years.
It's really interesting hearing you talk and then recalling that you really came from a long career as an entrepreneur. So you've probably experienced this in the business world where you've started a small business that's grown. How has your experience as a businesswoman translated? Like, which is harder, a business and nonprofit, or are they similar in some ways?
I think there are some similarities and a whole lot of differences. Similarities include when you start something, you have to be willing to step into the unknown. If you think about the enormity of what you are trying to do from the outset, you'll probably never, you know, you'll never take the next step because it is overwhelming. You have to take it in pieces, one step at a time. I think you need to have a certain comfort with chaos, frankly, and unpredictability, and you need to bring a flexible approach to everything that you do and be adaptive and be able to learn, you know, on the fly and learn quickly. I think it is about recognizing great leaders and making sure that you do everything you can to bring strong leadership into the organization from the get-go. That's really, really important. So all those things are very pertinent, and I think there are also things that you learn in the for-profit world that really have no business in a movement-building organization. So, a lot of hierarchy, although that's shifting in the for-profit world, obviously, but you tend to have more hierarchical decision-making, less shared responsibility, less shared leadership, certainly not the focus on centering equity and inclusion. At least when I was back in my company days, that was not an area of focus for us. And we are all about that at Mothers Out Front. And so that's been, you know, that's really very, that requires a very, very different way of approaching things and a very different sort of intentionality to the work that you do. So those are a few examples of things that are the same and things that are very, very different. As for which is harder, I mean, this is the most important work, right? This is the most important work that we're doing at Mothers Out Front, that you're doing, Deb, with the Nature Conservancy. This is about saving our planet, to save humanity ultimately. And that is, the of course, the hardest work too. But you know, if it's I think the most important work is always the hardest work, and so that, compared to starting a medical device company, as challenging as that was, this is much more challenging. It's also a whole lot more fulfilling, and to be able to work with the incredible people that I get to work with day in, day out is such a privilege.
I can imagine. One of the things that I love the most about the stage I'm in my career is mentoring others and helping to lift other people's leadership. And it sounds like that's really the model of Mothers Out Front, is you bring women in and you help them be their best, you know, around this really vital mission. So I think that's...
Yeah, absolutely. That's, we do. And what's exciting is people come in, they develop leadership skills, they then start coaching other moms that are coming in. So there's a constant sort of recycling or infusion of new leadership, and mothers who become sort of veteran organizers, and they turn around and share everything they've learned with the moms coming in. And it means that it is a renewable resource, right?
It's a virtuous cycle, right?
Exactly. Recycled. Thank you. Exactly.
Yeah, that is really wonderful. So there's another question about how you engage frontline communities. I think it's really wonderful that you're centering in equity. And I really like this idea that some of it's generational equity. And then, of course, there's racial equity and thinking about frontline communities. Yeah. So the question is, as a practical matter, are you engaging frontline communities? Are you bringing in mothers who are from frontline communities as part of this work?
Yes. So the answer is yes. And you know, the most important thing we need to do in order to do that effectively, which we have learned a lot about over the last few years, is to, first of all, bring the necessary intentionality. It doesn't happen organically. And commit the resources. So it's not just talking about it, it's actually walking the walk. So that means investing in hiring organizers on the ground in frontline communities who can be there, develop the necessary relationships. So that's really important. Another really important part of that is understanding the need to be flexible in how we organize in different communities. So what works in one community, and I don't mean just the campaigns that are chosen, I mean, how we actually go about engaging and developing the leadership of mothers in these communities, it looks quite different. And so we need to bring a different approaches to different communities while maintaining certain goals and standards, obviously, but really understand that different communities take different approaches. So the answer is yes, we are. We started a year and a half ago a frontline organizing program where we had a manager of five organizers in paid staff organizers in different frontline communities. We have now, that is no longer a separate program, that is fully integrated into the rest of the organizing that we do, because it simply needs to be a part of all the work that we do. We simply, in Massachusetts, to give you another example, we just went through a restructuring process last spring. And part of that was saying, okay, any campaign that a team takes on has to center environmental justice in it in one form or another. That's just simply a requirement
of
the work we do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That is really great. So we've got a couple of questions. One is, you know, about who's invited to be part of this movement. One is, are you just recruiting women who have children? What about other women and men as part of the movement? And what about grandmothers?
Well,
you know, the grandmother who's very excited about being part of Mothers Out Front.
I have a particular soft spot for the grandmothers. We have so many grandmothers involved in our movement. We actually have here in Massachusetts a I think they call themselves the elders group. They form their own little group. I mean, that doesn't mean they're on their own. They organize as part of teams with other, you know, moms of all different ages and people. But they've also developed their own little cohort where they can connect. So the grandmothers are an incredible source of power and have been from day one. Some of our most enthusiastic and active moms are our grandmothers. And no, you absolutely do not need to be a mom to join Mothers Out Front. It is more of sort of an organizing concept that we are mothers and that we are bound together by our shared desire to create the world we want for not just our children, but all children. So no, you do not need to be a mother. You do not need to be a woman. You can be a man. You can be non-binary. You can be anything. You know, we welcome everybody into our movement, just as we know we need to work closely with allies. In order to win, we've got to have a broad-based, diverse movement in order to win as well.
So we've got a question, a more specific question about it's not enough to shift to clean energy and electrification of everything here in the first world. We must also reduce our consumption of natural resources. No one's really talking about this. And will Mothers Out Front take on this critical public education task? And I appreciated how in the conversation about natural gas and shifting off of natural gas for home heating, it really is a public education task with, you know, 70% of folks in Massachusetts thinking their natural gas was actually a really good thing. And, you know, so efficiency, reduction of consumption, is that part of your big thinking?
It is, yes. I mean, we have a lot of local campaigns that focus on specifically on energy efficiency and encouraging people to make changes in their homes that are, you know, to make them more energy efficient. So that is a part of so many of the conversations at Mothers Out Front and the work that our teams do. Having said that, you know, we are very aware of the pitfalls of emphasizing personal behavioral choices as a way to solve the climate crisis, because we know, you know, it doesn't matter how many decisions any one of us makes to drive less, to get an electric car, to use less energy, to weatherize your home, to switch to air pumps. It doesn't make any difference if we don't have broad policy change. It just doesn't. I mean, among other things, you're talking about homes that cannot afford to make those investments, et cetera. And so we really, while we value people making those personal choices, and it's an important step to understanding what your carbon footprint is and how all these things are connected, while we do value that, our focus is always on policy and systemic change.
Yeah, that's same at the Nature Conservancy. You know, we're all about scaling action. There's an urgency for action, and we want you know, how we're approaching it to meet that challenge, which means that while individual choices to, you know, consumption choices are important, it's not going to be the ultimate answer. I'm really curious, where are you finding hope these days? That was a question that came in also, and I love that. Where are you finding hope?
It's a great question. I mean, I'll be totally honest. I have my days. I mean, I have my days when I walk into the kitchen and I've just read something and I just want to weep, or I go for a walk and I look at the beautiful trees and I wonder, you know, what is this all going to look like in 20 years? Usually the moments of deepest despair are around thinking about what it means for my children. But what gives me hope is always interacting with other moms who are part of Mothers Out Front and hearing about the work that they're doing. One of the hardest things about the pandemic is that all this has to be done virtually. One of my favorite things to do is to go travel, visit with moms and see the work they're doing on the ground, because it's so exciting and so inspiring. But just frankly dropping in on a little meeting at Mothers Out Front or catching up with one of our downtown Boston leaders, as I did a couple of days ago, those are the most exciting, hopeful moments that I have. And they're grounded in real stuff. It's not like, oh, maybe, you know, President Biden is going to wave a magic wand and make all this bad stuff go away. I mean, it really, it's grounded in real stuff happening and seeing these moms do just incredible things in their communities and beyond to protect the climate.
That's a wonderful answer. It is for me too, as the head of the Nature Conservancy in Massachusetts. What I miss the most with this pandemic is actually getting into the field, seeing the actual work, seeing the partners and the people doing the important work. And luckily, there's a light at the end of this tunnel. It's also true that there is no magic wand. It takes grassroots organizations. It takes science organizations like ours. You know, it takes all of us together to really tackle this existential crisis for humanity.
Yeah.
So look, we're approaching the end of our time today. I just want to thank you so much. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
I think, only to say that to everybody who's joined us today, you know, every one of us has a role to play in addressing the climate crisis. Your involvement may not be to join Mothers Out Front, although we certainly enthusiastically welcome you, but everybody has a part to play. And whether you're, you know, engaged in an organization like the Nature Conservancy, whether you're on a board of a company or of a nonprofit organization or whatever, there is something you can be doing to ensure that the practices of whatever institution you're associated with are consistent with protecting the planet and creating the world we want for our kids. So not investing in fossil fuels, right? Not investing in the bad stuff, promoting the good stuff. Those are all things that we can play a role in pushing in our own lives in various ways. And I, you know, again, as important as it is to make your personal choices, which is great, I really encourage you to think about any institution you're associated with and the role that institution can play too in pushing for change. And again, we would love to have you join us too at Mothers Out Front. So thank you.
Where can they find you?
They can find us online, mothersoutfront.org.
That's great.
And join us there, sign up for our email alerts. We'd love to have you engaged. And if you're in Massachusetts, there's a decent chance there's a team in your area and you can join your local team. And you can find out how to do that on our website too.
That is really wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us today. And thank you to everyone who tuned in for your support of the Nature Conservancy. It's your support that makes all of this work possible. We'll be sending everyone a follow-up email over the coming days with links to the resources we talked about today and a recording of the webinar. And if you're enjoying these webinars, please share them with your friends. You can also follow us on social media at conserve_MA on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with our work and get updates on upcoming virtual opportunities to connect with us. On December 10th, please join us for a webinar with Tracy Williams, TNC's Northwest Territories Conservation Lead. Terry will talk about how the Nature Conservancy, along with its Canadian affiliate, Nature United, helped North America's new 6.5 million acre protected area become a reality. As always, you can find the latest webinar schedule and register at nature.org/MAwebinars. And thank you again for joining us and have a wonderful afternoon.
Thanks so much.